Questions.
Welcome. So this is take three. Questions. Dear Anchovy and Caper, this is Mike from Whetston.
Oh, Whetston. I used to live in Whetston.
I was delighted to hear the conversation during last week's Questions Schmestions about Mark's visit to a certain well-known pizzeria in London's fashionable Soho, because this discussion answered two schmestions that I was planning to write in with.
Okay.
You see, I was sitting on the next table from Mark that evening, and I had two burning questions. Firstly, what on earth was on your pizza? And I will admit to having guess the answer of a vegan pizza with anchovies and capers.
Yeah.
Lordy. The second question was to wonder who Mark's dining companion was. I knew I recognised him, but couldn't for the life of me place him. So Mark's revelation that it was Ollie Fox of Questions Schmestions jingle fame, just heard him playing, certainly helped to calm my addled brain. I was at your recent live recording at the Union Chapel, so I witnessed Ollie's fine performance firsthand. I just didn't recognise him without a clarinet in his hand. So that, I have to say, that's that same pizzeria.
Yes.
When I was having a pizza with the good lady ceramicist and a geographer friend.
Okay.
This guy comes over and says, "All right, Simon, how are you doing?" I said, "Hi, Chris, how are you?" And anyway, have a nice. I said, "Are you having a meal?" He said, "No, I'm doing a show downstairs." I said,
"Oh yeah, because it's got the jazz club downstairs."
Jazz club downstairs. I hope it goes really well. So then he scuttles off, and my geographer friend says, "Who was that?" I said, "That was Chris Difford." No. Anyway, huge Squeeze fan, didn't recognise Chris.
Oh wow!
He's got big, heavier glasses than you. Anyway, so show it's a showbiz pizzeria.
He's a sharp-dressed man, though.
Mike says, so that leaves me only my third schmestion that still requires an answer. We spotted you in the restaurant, Mark, I felt duty-bound as a very long-term listener to say hello, but the good lady global director of content, her indoors, kicked me under the table and urged me to leave you alone to enjoy your vegan pizza
with
in
double capers and double anchovies.
So my schmestion is, how do you feel about being interrupted by annoying fanboys like me when you're just trying to get on with your life? And is there a hello to Jason Isaacs equivalent for Mark that I could have used as a polite but unobtrusive acknowledgement of our shared love of mass-produced Italian-inspired cuisine? Oh, yes, and films. By the way, that was a very, very small pizza. Or Mark does have unusually large hands. Mike in Whetston.
It was a classic, because nowadays you get is it classic or Romano? Romano is just flattened out more, so it's bigger, right?
I like that one.
No, I like the classic. The classic, it's a manage, because I have the whole thing that the problem with the Romano is it kind of goes over the edges of the plate.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is you have the classic, right? And it's in the pizza plate, and you eat all the crust all the way round. Okay, go all the way round first. Because then after that, it's just pure enjoyment. So it's like you've got to eat all the crusty bit first, and you go all the way, turn the plate, to eat the crust.
This is a very revealing answer,
and
by
all the time that you're doing it, it's because when you've done that, it's just pure pleasure.
So there is a repetition and precision in the way you eat your pizza.
Yes, and it's always exactly the same.
And
at some point, somebody will go, "What are you doing?" And I go, "Well, this is how I eat pizza." And incidentally, child three would understand.
Yes, child three almost certainly would understand.
But honestly, people, I cannot think of, and if I say this now, then it'll be, I cannot think of an occasion in which anyone has been rude or obtrusive or any of those things. We have very nice listeners.
Yes.
And it, without exception, I'm not just saying this, people who have said hello have always done so I love the podcast, or more usually, my dad loves your stuff.
Yeah.
That's become the big thing.
Love the show, Steve, and hello to Jason Isaacs are the perfect things, which I get, and you get, and it's the perfect way of just saying, "I'm listening, I enjoy the show," and it's not very, the only time it's ever been nasty was in Starbucks, the one near All Souls Langham Place, next to the BBC, and someone came over and spat at me and on me, in fact, having established who I was. So clearly someone who hadn't guessed the golden hour correctly and wanted to...
You're kidding!
Yeah, no, I reported it, and the staff were very attentive, and they, you know, said, "Well, we'll make sure he doesn't come back." This was about, I don't know, a decade ago, something like that. Unpleasant, though, as you can quite imagine.
I'm absolutely shocked. Yeah.
Anyway, to answer your question, Mike in Whetstone, saying hello to Jason Isaacs or love the show, Steve, is enough.
Yeah. And also it is always nice because it's, I do tell Jason. I do tell him.
Yes, absolutely.
Since the last time I saw you, we've had 23 hellos, Jason Isaacs. Yes.
A question from Nick Ord.
Okay.
I struggle. I'm going to struggle with this one, I think.
Okay.
I need your help. With the time of year for seasonal festivities,
yeah,
from Navaratri, which was yesterday, October the 15th, Hindu festival for the goddess Durgi, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Diwali next week, 24th of October, Christmas, Hanukkah in December, and others, including my birthday on the 1st. This is Nick Ord saying it, not me.
Yeah.
I find myself again lamenting the slow demise of physical media. For pretty much my entire life, when faced with gift buying for friends and loved ones of all creeds and occasions, some of the best, most personal and cost-effective items have been movies, stories, games, and albums via vinyl records, Blu-rays, DVDs, CDs, tapes, consoles, and books.
Yes.
Throw in booze and you've probably covered every item I've ever bought for anyone or had bought for me in return, except for socks, aftershave, and tat. But really, how much of those can you buy?
Socks, aftershave, and tat is rather like Uptown Top Ranking pants and ting.
Very good. So now with many people, especially post-COVID, living healthier and drinking less, and with digital downloads ever more in the ascendancy, what do we buy, people? An e-book? An audio book? Fruit-based content download? Game Pass? Streaming subscription? It's not the same. Sure, there are event-based options like concert tickets and gadgets, like Hoovers and phones and TVs, games, consoles, and hi-fis, but these are too expensive for all. The specialist of special ones in your life on the specialist of occasions. I myself am easy to buy for, as I am still old enough and geeky enough to appreciate a sturdy bit of vinyl, paper, or plastic. But I am increasingly feeling like that meme of the polar bear sat on the ever-deteriorating ice shelf in such stakes. And so, socks and tat aside, what affordable gift options would you recommend these? I mean, the idea of asking us,
yes,
about affordable gift options is laughable. Anyway, hugest thanks. Still loving the show after 13 years of listening.
Wow.
But it is a genuine issue because most people could say, okay, CD, book, video, you know, mind you, even computer games are very expensive, but yeah, it was a great thing to give.
But I still do, like, for example, Good Lady Professor, if it's a, you know, birthday or whatever, it's always still CDs because we have CDs because our, you know, we had a terrible internet connection for so long. So CDs, books, because physical media, I like reading a book. I've just been reading the Herzog biography, Every Man for Himself and God Against All, which is terrifically good. And I like the physical copy of it because I can make notes on it. And I don't know that those things will ever go away. I certainly hope they don't. And then the other thing that as you know from this, is I just get given t-shirts. And it's now become the thing that my family just give me t-shirts with ever more obscure things. So I'm currently, this is a Ruttles t-shirt. And I have, one of my favorite at the moment is one which just has the names of the Gang of Four on it, which is, makes me very, very happy. But so yeah, t-shirts,
perfume?
No, a thing you put in the bath, bath thing that
a bath bomb?
Not a bath bomb. No. But there's some particular bath.
Oilatum emollient.
I have all their albums that I get. But it's pretty, we're at the point, I mean, we've been married for 32 years, whatever, we're at the point when it's, you know, she'll send me a list and I'll get that list.
Okay, fair enough. The only thing I managed to do of any kind of, because I too think it's so difficult, is I've decided that I only want things that can be consumed.
Yes.
I don't want a thing.
Yeah, my cousin Peter sent out a message which said, don't give me anything that I can't eat or drink.
Yeah, and I think that's right. But birthday before last, I said, give me something that you like.
Yes, which is a really smart thing to have done.
Something that you've appreciated or something that you think I might appreciate.
Yes.
So some people just didn't bother. Child 3 got me, we went to a comedy gig comedian that he thought I would like, which, you know, which I did.
Child 3 stormed it last night, apparently.
Yeah, he was back on
stage. Can I tell his joke? Or am I not allowed to?
I will message him now.
Okay, fine. Because he told me...
He's quite proprietorial.
Yeah, I know he is. That's why I asked. Because he told me this joke, he told us this joke, that he had written, he said about 10 seconds before he went on stage. And he told me, and I thought it was very, very funny, but I'm aware that if I say it, I might blow it. So
Mark wants to know...
If he can tell the...
Can he tell the joke?
I mean, credited to Child 3, obviously.
Can he tell your joke from last night? You can tighten this up in the edit, or maybe don't bother.
Or maybe don't bother, yes.
Right.
Okay, fine. We'll see.
I put the question out.
Anyway, so.
Frankie in Albuquerque. Yes. In the light of the recent BlackBerry film, what company has you shocked that they've still not gone out of business? I will get this rolling with the Republican Party in America before you do. That might not be what you're asking, Frankie in Albuquerque.
We should say we're recording this on Wednesday morning.
Wednesday, yes.
And as of the time of recording, the Republican Party have still not managed to elect a speaker.
And they're also not out of business just yet.
No, they're not out of business. There was a hilarious clip of Kevin McCarthy blaming the Democrats for not voting a Republican speaker in. Jim Jordan had lost the vote at least one. But the last vote they had, Hakeem Jeffries was 212. And Jordan was, it's just like the party of chaos. But of course, the party of chaos because the party of chaos.
Frankie would like to know,
which company?
Is there a company as you shocked that they've not gone out? The trouble is, if we answer this, if you mention a particular shop because you think this particular shop is rubbish,
yeah,
actually will be actionable because you...
Well, can I say, the thing that I'm always surprised by, if you go into London's busy West End, right?
Yes.
In the centre of London's busy West End is Leicester Square. Leicester Square is... the home of premieres, as they would like to tell you. And, you know, they have three kind of quite major cinemas. They also have a hotel, which is a really expensive hotel, which as you walk into it, the people on the door say, hello, welcome to London's best hotel, to which the answer is, I think I'll be the judge of that.
Correct.
But on a corner of that August Square, where I believe the Swiss Center used to be, because my grandmother is Swiss German, and she would go uptown to go to the Swiss Center if she was in London, is now a thing which is M&M World. And I have no idea how M&M World exists.
That's true, actually.
Not only how it exists, there are queues. There are queues for people to go into a two-story shop.
And do what?
Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it. M&M World is a thing that exists in the very heart of London. You know, like literally Premier Central, M&M World.
You can buy M&Ms from your local newsagent, but also you can queue up and go into M&M World. There must be something in there that...
Well, I've been in there. It's just two stories of the big models of an M&M with legs and arms.
On the subject that maybe, well, in which case...
And Tat.
Frankie in Albuquerque. Also, there is this must exist in other places, but on Oxford Street, there are lots of sweet shops.
Yes, for which the rent must be astonishing.
And there's no one ever, anyone in there? And I'm thinking...
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, it's a money laundering thing. You better take that out, Simon.
Is that right?
What is
really?
So
what, you mean like the little
take that out. All the candy shops where there's no customers, but you think what
this is a thing. Yeah. Yeah, and usually but there's usually a guy there who'll sell you a phone charger or something.
Anyway.
Wow, I had no idea. I honestly, sometimes I think I don't notice anything that's going on around.
Anyway, none of that might end up in the pod. I don't know. But so you could say in some parts of this country,
yes,
there are very pink American candy stores or stores that just sell pink candy. And there's no one ever, anyone in there, and thinking, how...
Is that what that is?
Frankie in Albuquerque, that's my answer then. Those strange, strange sweet stores where no one buys any sweets. Anyway.
I had no idea about
Mark
that.
Mark says, a couple of similar recommendation requests.
Okay.
Dear Mort...
My mind is blown now.
Doctors Morticia and Gomez, your urgent assistance is required for an LTL and an FTE. The weekend before Halloween is a very special person is visiting me, and I'm trying to pull out all the stops, as they say, for something of a Halloween extravaganza.
Okay.
Suffice to say that pumpkins will be picked and then cooked. Virtual reality cabins in the woods, hopefully escape from. The latter part of our packed agenda involves watching scary films whilst consuming Halloween-themed snacks. However, despite being a big fan of Halloween, the person in question, her who will hopefully be indoors, is not a big fan of horror movies. I am therefore looking for a couple of suggestions for slightly spooky films. Ooh. A few scares higher than family-friendly fare that will not cause lasting trauma. Please can you suggest some viewing fare that sits equidistant between Goosebumps and the Addams Family and Hereditary and Host? So
yeah,
forget the far end, but just dial it up a little bit from the Addams Family.
Well, the classic is the Others, isn't it? Is it called The Others? The Nicole Kidman film? Is it? I think absolutely certainly is called The Others, which I believe is a 12 certificate. And it is properly creepy, and yeah, it is called The Others. And I think it's a 12 certificate. Let me just check that, bbfc.co.uk, sorry, .co.uk. Yes, thank you. Just give me the thing. Honestly, they need to have a fuzzy search section on this. This is one thing they never, The Others, 12. Moderate threat, horror, upsetting, setting scenes. That is the absolute perfect sweet spot between those things that you've just asked about.
Similarly, Sarah says, as a grown-up with a few ACEs, brackets, adverse childhood experiences up their sleeve, becoming and then actually being a parent meant I've been working even harder on my therapy game. The healing process is long and winds in ways that I didn't know it would. Can I just say on that subject, winding, and you know, we wend our weary way. And it was Susie Dent who was pointing this out. We don't have a past tense of go, to go, the verb. We don't say she goed. We say they went.
Yes.
Which is the past tense of wend. And I never knew that.
Neither did I.
Isn't it? Thank you, Susie Dent.
Anyway. We wend, they went. Wow.
So our past tense for go
Susie Dent is just great, isn't she?
She is genius. In fact, we mentioned her for the Ips Dixit thing a couple of weeks ago.
That's right, yeah.
And I've thought about that quite a lot recently, that everybody is an Ips Dixitist.
Yes.
There are so many occasions where if someone says something is true, you accept it as gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it might not be.
So basically, Susie Dent and Stephen King between them are all you need to know.
There's never been a more worth... Anyway, so now Sarah continues.
Yeah.
Enough of that. So the healing process is long and winds in ways that I didn't know it would, but there's never been a more worthwhile goal than being the mum I now see I deserve to my own daughter. My homework has been to watch a horror film and actually feel afraid, recognizing an emotion I've been doing my best to rein in and reduce for decades. I absolutely see the worth in this task from what we've done. I know that I'll feel afraid, but I'll be able to manage it because it's not the same fear. And yet it still feels like a massive leap into a big pot of risk. My question is, as someone who hasn't watched a horror film for years, and honestly, even then at the cinema with friends, I would only watch the top left-hand corner of the screen. That's the way I'd go. What would you recommend? That's the kind of pizza-cutting discipline that you have.
Yeah, very good, very good.
What would you recommend as a good place to start? At university, I loved the Gothic literature module, if that helps.
Yeah, I mean, the Daniel Radcliffe Woman in Black is probably a good place to start. Because if you remember, again, that was a 12 certificate, and there was a lot of fuss about it should have been a 15. But it is scary, it is creepy, but it's not too scary or too creepy.
Okay, do that, and maybe read the BBFC advice as well, because that might forewarn you about some of the things that are coming up.
But there were definitely young viewers of The Woman in Black who were completely freaked out by it, because it probably... I mean, what happened was... As I remember, the BBFC got them to darken some things and to actually reduce the volume on some segments to sort of just generally take the edge off it. But it is properly creepy. So I think that's probably, if you're talking about an entry-level horror, that's probably a very good thing. And again, I'd say You know, I would say Babadook is a good way in, although I am aware of the fact that Friedkin said that Babadook was one of the scariest films he'd ever seen.
I don't think that.
Okay.
Anyway, Sarah says, many thanks from Special Needs Teacher's Sensory Room just off the vestry.
Very good.
Thank you, Sarah. Jean in Darlington, what film traumatised you as a child? To which the two films that immediately occurred to me were The Birds, which I saw on television.
Oh, wow.
And Wizard of Oz was probably the first one.
The Flying Monkeys.
Yeah, the Enchanted Forest.
Yeah, the Flying Monkeys, yeah.
And because they showed it at my primary school. And we sat in rows because that's what you did. So you sit with your class. And on a regular basis, there were two or three people who just get up and go. And I don't think I ever left, but I stayed and probably wished I'd left.
Do you remember do you know the Chapman brothers, Jake and Dinos Chapman, the artists?
No.
Okay. They're artists, and they created a work that was called Hell. And it was like this kind of like Hieronymus Boschian vision of hell. And they made these really, really disturbing sculptures of like children with feet on their face, just really, really disturbing stuff. And for a while, they were kind of considered to be like the real kind of bad boys of British art. And I remember doing an interview with them in which it was either Jake or Dinos, I think it was Jake, talked about seeing The Birds for the first time and being completely freaked out by the zoom in. You remember when they find, and the eyes are, and it goes, and it literally jumps in. And
it was the climbing frame scene as well, which is fantastic.
Of course.
Start with it's just one, and then when you pan back, there's like 1,000.
Yeah. No, that's great. And The Wizard of Oz is fascinating because...
Were you traumatized as a child by a film?
Yes, I will. I'm getting to that. I'm just telling you. The Wizard of Oz is interesting because The Flying Monkeys were done by Doug Trumbull's dad. Doug Trumbull made Silent Running, and his father worked in the movie business, and he did the Flying Monkeys, which are generally now considered to be one of the scariest things in cinema. The film which traumatized me as a child, and I mean traumatized in the proper sense of traumatized, was Jeremy, because I literally couldn't shake it off. I didn't know I was going to see it. It was the supporting feature. It drew me in and then broke my heart to the point that I might as well have had a relationship and then broken up. It was so hot. I could not throw it off, and it haunted me for ages afterwards. Now I love it. Now it's one of my favorite films, but it absolutely, really, really haunted me. And the other thing that haunted me as a child was in Doctor Who, the Autons, who, if you remember, they were like shop dummies.
Oh, yeah.
And their wrist would click down and they had a gun in their wrist.
Oh, that'd be good. I'd like that.
Yeah. And there was a scene in one of the early episodes of Spearhead from Space, I think it was called, in which somebody walks past a shop window and there's a dummy in the shop window. And as they walk past, the dummy turns and look. And that really freaked me out to the point that I couldn't go into, in Fabric, the Peter Strickland film, that's full of those kind of shop dummies that absolutely, that idea about something standing still and then it moves, or the Weeping Angels later on in Doctor Who.
Carly in Bridgnorth, what smell that people find disgusting do you secretly like?
Ooh.
I actually mentioned this to our redactor in chief, and to which he said, your own farts. I'm not sure that's true, actually, but obviously he's very revealing about our redactor.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? Everyone loves the smell of their own farts, because I'm not being crass. I'm trying. I mean, I know I am being crass, but there's the thing about opinion. Opinions are like bottoms. Everyone's got one, and everyone thinks that theirs is the only one that doesn't stink.
Right.
And that's what there is the thing about, you know, people. So, but it's people don't generally think the smell of their own farts is disgusting, because it's smells that you make.
I think people realize that their farts are disgusting.
No, they realize that they are, but it's a different thing. Somebody else's, it's the idea of inhaling air that only recently was in somebody else's bottom.
I wish I could say that I like the smell of Surströmming, which is officially the worst smell in the world.
Oh, yeah, so is that the fish?
It's the pickled fish.
Pickled fish.
In a tin, which you have to open in a... if you're going to open it, you
closed environment.
You know, because it's just very, very dangerous. The only thing I can think of is I really like wet dog smell, and a lot of people say they hate the wet dog smell.
Well, who would hate the smell of a wet dog?
Exactly. You know, petrol, Terps, white spirit, they smell nice. Wet dogs, they smell nice.
I tell you what I do. I hate the smell of the fox poo on the dog that the dog seems to love. And so, you know, the dog will rub their head on the fox poo and then you have to wash it off and then the dog will be very, very annoyed because that smells bad. The only thing I can think of is I know some people have a really, really bad reaction to the smell of car cleaner. You know, if you take your car to be cleaned,
yes,
and there is some chemical that they use, and I think it's sort of known generally as new car smell. And I know some people who, if they rent a car, they hate the fact that they get into it and it's got, because it is like, you know, aerated napalm. But I actually really like that chemical smell in the same way that I like the smell of like diesel and petrol, even though I know it's very, very bad and is, you know, will destroy the planet.
Two more questions, but one is an exorcist question. So okay. We'll go with that one
okay.
First. Harriet Morris.
Okay.
Medium-term listener, Vanguard Easter. I finally got around to watching The Exorcist last week after Mark played a clip. It was super impressive. Okay. I do not like all horror films. I would like to say my taste is what I call intelligent/cerebral horror. Okay. Babadook, Jordan Peele, etc.
Yeah.
There were indeed things I liked about the film. Other aspects seemed dated, but what I wanted to understand is this. Mm-hmm. If Mark thinks this is the greatest film ever made, he must see it as having a timeless, enduring quality that speaks to us now as powerfully as in the 1970s. What I found utterly abhorrent were the two instances where Reagan's behavior was sexualized, one very graphic and very, very violent. In the past, I am sure that openly sexualizing children was seen as okay by some people, but this time stamps it as being very bound by its era. But how can this still be a great film when it contains such graphic material? I also think that if we podcast audience have to hear Mark extol the virtues of this film, then he is also honor-bound to warn us that it sexualizes a child. It is unfair not to, and I certainly would not have watched it had I known.
Okay, just read me back the beginning of the when we got into that bit, the phrase that you used, that there were two horrifying moments.
What I found utterly abhorrent were the two instances where Reagan's behavior was sexualized.
Okay.
One very graphic and one very violent. Yeah.
What I found utterly abhorrent were the two instances. The what happens in The Exorcist is that the demon's sexualization of a child is used absolutely as abhorrent. That's the point. The point is that the demonic force, which is the epitome of evil, does the worst possible thing. And the worst possible thing is the sexualization of the child. And the scene that you're talking about, the violent one, is absolutely used as this is completely horrible. I remember talking to Bill Blatty about that particular scene, the most notorious scene in the film, in which he said, and then I came to the moment when I had to think of something that was the worst thing I could think of, something that was so bad that it would drive an atheist to a priest to insist that her daughter was possessed. It's not that the film sexualizes the child. It's that the film depicts a demon doing the worst possible thing. And I think that that's completely within the keeping of the story. It is about, you know, the desecration of innocence and the horror that that provokes. And the fact that your response was abhorrence, that's right. That's exactly what it should be. I would warn you if I thought that there was a film in which children were sexualized, you know, in a titillating or... But it is literally put there to be the worst possible thing, the thing that drives the atheist Chris McNeil to go to Father Karras and say, "Father, I think my little girl is possessed." So the reason I couldn't warn you about it is because I I appreciate that it's possible to respond to things in very different ways. I'm also aware, of course, because I've written a lot about The Exorcist, that there are readings of The Exorcist that would go against, you know, what I'm saying and would probably agree with what you're saying. Oh, it's exploitative. I remember Max von Sydow himself said that he thought that The Exorcist was gave us a very disturbing portrait of the way in which we viewed children. So it's in as much as the demonization of them, because he, you know, obviously he comes from a, you know, sort of Swedish background. He said, well, if you come from a culture that doesn't believe in the devil, you don't believe in the devil, you're not scared of the devil. So what he saw it about was much more about the demonization of children. I mean, he's in the film. So I understand that the film is open to numerous interpretations, and I'm not in any way belittling your point, because if that's how you felt about it, then that is a valid response. My response would be that that's the point. The point is that that thing that you're mentioning is there to be the most abhorrent thing possible, which is different to sexualizing a child, which I don't think it does.
Harriet, thank you for the email. Correspondence@kevinandmary.com. Finally, Helen in Milton Keynes. What is something that men do or say that makes you think he's going to be single forever? Helen, what you've done is, I think you've asked a question, one that I've never thought of. So I've certainly never been asked it before.
No.
So I have, I genuinely
think. Do it again. What is something that men do?
Men, particularly men, do or say that makes you think they're going to be single forever? And I think the reason I've never thought that is you see obnoxious people getting married. People who are arrogant, people who are entitled, people who are violent, narcissistic, the worst, and they end up with beautiful women, or, you know, they end up married. So I don't think I've ever, you can see repulsive people, and I don't think I've thought, one, you're repulsive. I don't think I've ever thought you're going to be single forever. Have you ever thought that?
No, I mean, this is interesting, because I have a kind of running joke with a couple of good friends of mine, Nigel and Paul, with whom I've had the same conversation, which is, you know, women marry beneath themselves, and I'm eternally grateful for that. The joke being that these friends that I'm talking about and me both believe, all three of us believe,
you've done rather well.
We have done rather well. On our anniversary, I have, you know, sometimes when I was on social media, I put up, there's one of the pictures that I have of the good lady professor at her indoors and I getting married. And inevitably underneath it, people would go, wow, you're punching above your weight, you know, or, you know, result.
Would you say, yep.
Yeah. And exactly. Because I do. I mean, believe me, there is no part of me that doesn't wake up every morning and think, I can't quite believe how much I lucked out.
So is there anything?
No. So what I'm saying is, I feel the same way as you. We all know smart, you know, intelligent women who are married to people that you go, but they're an arse.
Yes.
You know, and the answer is, I agree with what you just said. I mean, people who were vile. Is it a gender thing?
I don't know. Who knows? It may be. I might be entirely wrong, Helen and Milton Keynes. I wonder if this is what her and a bunch of her female friends have been talking about people that they know and have said, I don't think they'll ever end up with somebody. But I just don't think, maybe it's not what blokes talk about. But anyway, I don't think I've ever said that, because you see...
No, I cannot think of... So the redactor just said, I've been watching a lot of Jordan Peterson videos, but I've never heard anyone say that. Because, again, this is partly self-selecting. I've never seen a Jordan Peterson video. What's that other guy? Andrew Tate, right? I've never seen any of his things. I read in a...
But these people are married and have partners.
Yeah,
and,
I know. I read in a newspaper that... I'll tell you one thing. Okay, no names, no pack drill. I was once in a public place doing, this is back in a previous century, in which a very famous film director and his very glamorous and rather brilliant wife mm-hmm. were there. And he was behaving to her in a manner that was absolutely atrocious. And I guarantee you, everyone in the room was thinking, why are you with him? Now, the actor is no longer with him, is now with somebody else. And But there was a point when I guarantee you everyone in that room, and it was a big room, were going, why are you with this person who is behaving like this? I just don't understand it.
Just before we're done,
yes.
Child 3 did get back.
Oh, and?
About the joke.
Whether I can tell his joke.
And you can't.
Okay.
He says, it's a new joke, but he's very flattered that you would ask and appreciate him asking. Okay. Appreciate that you asked first.
Okay.
But is his joke? Back off. Okay.
Yeah.
It may well be that the questions and the schmestions which have been sent this week need further examining. And if you have an opinion on any of the things that we've said or further questions, we would love to receive them. Can be about film, can be about your own farts.
We'd rather it wasn't about
your own farts. I think we've covered
wind. Covered ourselves in glory.
We've covered wind enough, I think. So send them to correspondence@kevinamo.com.
Just because on the subject of that.
Really?
No, just very quickly. In Viz magazine, there's a character called Johnny Fartpants. And one of my favorite, every now and then Viz touches a funny spot and then I laugh about it for about 4 days. And there is a point in which Johnny Fartpants goes abroad to Europe and he meets up with his French and German compatriots.
This isn't going to be funny.
It is. It's French and German compatriots who are...
It's not going to be this
yes,
funny.
Yes, okay. Hans Honkyhosen and Pierre Pumpy Trousers.
You've used those names quite a lot since.
I just think that was one of Vizzy's best ever jokes. Johnny Fartpants, Hans Honkyhosen... and Pierre Pumpy Trousers.
There you go. Very good. Actually was funny, as it turned out. Your questions for next week, please. correspondence@kevinamo.com. Mike, I think Mark's going to finish laughing by the time. Take one. We'll be back with you on Friday.